Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Episode 180 of Below the Belt. We're not going to do the darts episode today, as promised. I'm afraid we are actually going to talk about boxing.
What was the darts idea?
We was not going to make the darts.
All right.
On episode 179, I said, "Oh, it's not 180, but surely 180 has to be about darts, surely." And then we ended up talking about how good we are at darts. I've actually got 3 180s in my whole life. Like, I'm actually quite proud of it.
What? Hang on, you can play. You can genuinely play darts.
I have a dart board in my bedroom. Like, I don't throw very often.
That doesn't surprise me at all, right?
Yeah.
There's tons of stuff in that bedroom we shouldn't even talk about.
Yeah.
But you've hit 3 180s. I couldn't even get 3 darts in the whole 20 in that area. I couldn't do that. Yeah. You could give me not all for day, long, I wouldn't be able to do it.
Yeah, I haven't done it for a long time. Basically, in my early 20s, I didn't have a job. I just hang out at my stepbrother's house smoking weed, and he had a pool table and a dartboard. So I got semi-okay at pool and semi-okay at darts.
Did he get all the ladies as well? It sounds like a bit...
Yeah, I know, right? I know, right? Oh, yeah, but doing that, going to Browns and saying that, hey, I hit 3 180s before, get a free dance. I made a silly quip last episode about darts, but no, we're not going to talk about darts. Before we started recording, Flav, you had a little mini rant about fights like last night and the type of people it brings out on Twitter, i.e. casual fans.
Yeah, like, seeing a narrative around... The narrative is that more like influencer boxing or this crossover bullshit. Yeah. Oh, it's good for the sport, isn't it? Because it's more eyes and they're going to stay watching boxing and there's more people going to be interested in the sport. Firstly, there's absolutely no evidence that's true. Mm. For example, Jake Paul and KSI fought the other day. Logan Paul and whoever it was, right? Fought the other week, KSI and Tommy Fury. And my daughter, who is 15 years old, was interested and watched bits of it.
Right.
She's never going to watch another boxing match, ever. The boy watched a bit and then got bored and went away. Yeah. These people... And so my issue is, and it might bring a few eyes and it might bring some money, but I don't think it'll be so many that it's tangible and you'll see much difference. And boxers who are working on the way up at a domestic level will see any impact at all.
No, I agree. I think that's absolute rubbish that people say, oh, it'll bring more eyes to sport. Yes, you might get the odd anomaly where someone watches boxing And perhaps, I know, like someone like Will, right? Say your boy watched it and he was interested in it, and then he caught you watching, you know, a Kashu Bank fight, and then he might sit with you and watch it because he was interested in, you know, but that's possible. But I imagine that type of situation is in the vast minority. It's
yeah,
like 0.1%.
Yeah, yeah. So you got like you know, all the people watching the Misfit stuff.
Yeah,
Then they're there not because of the sport at all. They're there because they're watching their favorite YouTubers in the flesh or doing something weird and interesting, like a boxing match. But they're not interested in boxing. And the minute actual boxing comes on, they're going to switch off, because naturally you'll find a lot of people that are not interested in boxing will find boxing can be tedious at times, like it was last night at Parks.
Yeah. And it can be really confusing, actually, as well, because, you know, sometimes we'll be about to record and, you know, you follow boxing, but you might be like, well, why isn't this for the title? Or what belt is this for?
Yeah.
It could be fucking confusing for people. If you're not following it religiously, who's this champion? What weight is this one? Well, why, you know, there's all these, like last night, for example, right? Tyson Fury is a WBC heavyweight champion. He's having a boxing match, but it's not for his belt. Boxing shoots itself in the foot time and time again. Now, if you're going to have a freak show like him fighting Francis Ngannou, then have it for the championship. It was for the lineal championship because you can't decide whether that's on the line or not. It just always is.
Also, it's not real, is it? I mean, no. It is real, but it's not. There's no sanctioning body for the lineal champion, is there? There's no one. Does anyone claim to be? Like, we're the real. This belt is the actual one.
No, yeah, so there's the Transactional Boxing, the TBRB. They claim that they are the ones that kind of, we're the ones that decide who the lineal champion
is. But is it self-proclaimed? Is this, they've given them that?
Yes, yes. It's a load of boxing writers that have kind of got together.
Okay.
And mostly from America, but some from over here and around the world. And they kind of decide. They have like a board and they vote on things. The ring is very similar, actually. Ring Magazines is very similar. They have a board and lots of writers get together and they kind of decide, you know, who's the,
just on that, in terms of deciding and lobbying, because there'll be a lot of lobbying involved, right? Because it's quite a valuable thing to be lineal champion. You could run around talking about it all the time like Tyson Fury does. But it's in the interest of a fighter to lobby certain individuals who'd be in that conversation to ensure that when spoken about that they're the lineal champion. And it's the same thing. What I found out the other day was interesting. The top 10 isn't based on the fighters' performances against each other or most recent performances. It's a discussion and a debate, and relevant bodies can lobby reasons as to why they should be further up the charts than they are, or the rankings than they are, rather. So members of Tyson, not that this would happen necessarily because it's obvious, but members of Tyson's team would lobby the respective ratings, whoever's doing it, and talk to them and say, actually, no, we think we should be second or first here because of these reasons. It's not just like this subjective body of people going, well, no, this person's better. These body of work is better recently. Therefore, he should be number two. It doesn't work like that. It's weird.
No. And it's not like the WBC will have, like, you know, have a card and have number six face number five.
No, exactly.
They're not facing each other in terms of, like, order of rankings. You don't have one versus two or two versus three. The rankings are pretty much never mentioned. You don't really have, oh, this is the WBC number six against the WBC number four. Like, it doesn't happen. The only reason the rankings exist in that sense is so, as long as you're in the top 15, you can get a shot at the title.
Like, yeah, that's what it says, a ranked fighter. Really, that's all you need to be.
Yeah, and if you're number one,
you would never be able to have a rating system, a ranking system, rather than where six fights four, because there's too much. The fighters might belong to different stables or different promoters, so the fight would never happen. That's why boxing's completely fucked and UFC isn't, is because whatever Dana White says goes.
Yeah. Yeah,
like case in point last week. Like, this is how, like, we've all been watching boxing a long time, and I am a boxing fan more so than I am UFC, but I watch UFC.
Yeah,
they lost two of their headliners. Two people pulled out of injury in a boxing, in a boxing card. That would essentially collapse. It probably wouldn't even happen if you lost two of the main fighters to injury. You know, co-support or whatever it might be. They made better fights with people coming in, better names coming in to replace those injured fighters, because UFC has the monopoly over all of their fighters and their contracts. And there's, you know, their arguments about Dana White doesn't pay as much or whatever it is, but for a product, it's incredible, and boxing isn't. And so that's going back to the pointlessness of ratings, really, is it? Because it doesn't matter who's 10 and 9; they're not going to fight each other if they belong to different promoters, or their interests aren't there, or they don't want to take the risk.
The other thing is, if he was to do it like that, is it would take forever to get to number one, because boxers don't fight often enough.
Yeah, could you imagine the top 10, and you're 10, and you have to go through every one of those top 10 fighters?
It'd take forever.
It'd take forever, and you'd lose.
Never get anywhere. No. You'd never get anywhere, which is, I get you. And you know what, it's interesting, actually, because last week we had Joshua Buatsi. Was supposed to be fighting Dan Aziz, and then Dan Aziz did his back and he had to pull out quite late on. Mm. And somebody in the comments, on the Twitter comments, said, bring in Lyndon Arthur, right? Yeah. God knows what sort of weight Lyndon Arthur's at now. But it actually got me thinking, and it relates to your point about UFC, that they're to bring in a replacement. And I think boxing needs to be better at this, really. They should have perhaps had a Lyndon Arthur or somebody at a similar level on the undercard to bring them in,
of course,
just in case.
So this happens in UFC. They will have a main event, and they will have a backup fighter who will come in. This didn't happen with the last two, by the way, the ones I mentioned. The one I mentioned, Volkanovski came in to fight Islam. And Volkanovski, they'd fought previously and considered to be 1 and 2 in the division. They fought previously in Australia, and Volkanovski, some people argue that he won, so it was really close. When he fought this time, it wasn't close because he wasn't properly, he hadn't had a proper camp since he got battered in the first round. But the point isn't to generally, we'll have is if up until the fight happens, there is a backup fighter ready to go, as I understand it. Literally waiting, training, warming up, everything. Right. So that if anything happens, there is a seamless transition to what the next fighter is, and everybody understands it. And there is no people going, oh, this is outrageous, because injuries happen. If an injury happens in boxing, you don't see the fight for another 6 months, if ever.
Yep.
But just the reason why we're talking about this just previously about the crossover is that I've been on social media this morning, as I do with my coffee. And just the amount of, I thought the more eyes coming to the support would be good, but if the eyes are in the head of a moron, is it a good thing? I'd probably rather boxing die than more morons watch it.
Yeah.
But it's just on people going, the favorite thing of these people, right, is like they've just started watching boxing and they think they've found something that boxing fans haven't seen since the inception of the sport, right? And their favorite thing is counting the clock, so that's their favorite thing, right? These people. So the common thing is if the clock disappears on 10, right, on the TV, it disappears, because the clock on the TV isn't the same as the person beside the timekeeper beside the ring, right?
Yeah,
it can't be the same because it's two separate things, and the clock that you're watching is just a guide, right? Correct. So it disappears because it will never match up. It will never match up because they're two different things, right? So that's the first thing. They're like, oh my God, how many minutes? This round was, the clock disappeared 10 seconds. Why did it disappear? That's weird, isn't it? No, it's not weird. It's supposed to disappear. Just so that you don't get dickheads like you being confused. And then the thing is, like, if when Fury went down last night, the fucking people on TikTok were going, see, now count it. And watching the clock and count it. And of course, they don't understand it. They don't understand it's a 10 count, not 10 seconds to get up. It's a 10 count. So that it's not their fault for not knowing that. But it is their fault for thinking that they've found something that boxing fans have somehow missed for years and years and years. That's irritating.
Yeah.
Fucking dick.
And it's actually, now I think about it, it's actually correct that they do it the way they do it. Now, you could argue that the count of 10 isn't always going to be the same in every fight, because a ref might count slightly slower or slightly quicker. But actually, you can't, what do you want the ref to do? Get a stopwatch out and push it and, okay, we've got to get to exactly 10 seconds. Because what it has to be is clear for the boxer that's been knocked down. And the best way for it to be clear is to have a referee standing in front of them going 1, 2, like being really obvious, because they've they've just been punched in the face and knocked over. So it has to be clear, and it has to be safe. And so having a digital clock or, you know, another way of counting, it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. And as we know, Cal, as we know, is that it's once the 10 count's done, or you'll get up on 8, then the ref will spend some time with the fighter to make sure that they're safe for him to continue. So it could be 30 seconds by the time from when the punch landed to when the fight starts beginning. So to become obsessed by 10 seconds is completely illogical.
Yeah. No, it's really strange. People do it. I think it happened the first Fury Wilder fight, that, you know, Wilder put him down and everyone was like, oh, he was down for 13 seconds. Like, that's not how it works.
Doesn't matter. Often, no. I mean, it's worse when you get people who have watching boxing saying there's some sort of conspiracy, because that's worse.
Yeah, that is much worse. And what happens in what the sad thing about boxing is today is that, in particularly with the broadcasting, is that everybody has a dog in the fight. Everybody has a favorite. Somebody is always on somebody's side. No one's just there to cover the boxing matches. You know, even in football, actually, I remember you were talking about Ian Wright the other day. Ian Wright is very much an old school pundit. He just covers the football. Mm. He doesn't sit there and go, I used to play for Arsenal. Oh dear, Spurs are bad, Arsenal are good. Like, you know, the rest of the pundits are. They're all very much showing their allegiance all the time. Whereas an Ian Wright is, he just covers it. And I suppose the boxing equivalent is Barry Jones. Barry Jones is...
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
It is so important to boxing, because not only does he's just neutral, he just calls it, but also he talks about the technical stuff a lot. Mm. He talks about footwork and on the line and head movement. He talks about all this stuff that I could never do. And so someone like him is like so important to boxing, because actually last night, the broadcast, what did you watch it on? Did you watch the TN? Did you buy the pay-per-view?
Of course. I was watching it on a Fire Stick. I didn't feel obligated to pay for this.
No.
I'll pay, you know, I've paid for pay-per-views, yeah. I often do, because often I want the quality. I want to watch it without, and I'm happy to support it if it's legitimate, rather than the fucking circus that was last night. I'm not talking about the undercard, I'm very much talking about the main event. You were saying about the comms. It was Frampton and Laura Wood.
You had it on TNT then. I was watching the ESPN thing, and it was just... It was this constant... It just felt like a Saudi kind of infomercial.
Yeah.
Every 5 minutes, it was His Excellency and His Royal Highness.
Was it... ESPN's an American broadcast, right?
Correct, yeah.
What was it? Was that a choice? Because, like, American broadcasting following boxing is almost unlistenable to me.
Yeah.
I cannot stand it.
ESPN's probably the worst boxing broadcaster in the world, I would say.
Yeah.
I clicked a stream link and it was flawless. And that happens very rarely for me, that I will click on a stream and it will work from the first bell to the last. So I would just, and you know what I find myself doing these days with most sports, but particularly with boxing, is just having the volume on, but just not very loud. I just don't want it on. I want some noise, but I don't particularly want to pay attention to what Tim Bradley's got to say.
He's terrible. Tim Bradley's terrible when he's calling fights. It's like no one else can hear him. It's like there's no one at ESPN going, he isn't very good. We should probably replace him. No one.
No.
I mean, but my taste in callers is probably, you know, I don't like Costello really at all. Find him.
I get that.
He's a stalwart, right? I understand it. I respect him, and he's been amazing on radio. But as a TV caller, I don't think he's right. It's a bit jarring listening to it.
I was concerned about that quite early on, actually. When they got Mike Costello, I thought, yeah, but he's been doing radio for a long time. how is he going to adjust to doing TV? And I just thought I'm not sure this is going to work. But everyone was really happy about it because he is so good on the radio.
Of course, well, he's incredible because he does, that is his job, is to be as descriptive as possible. But when you
he's very good at
when
it,
you can see what when you can see what he's seeing, you don't need to be you don't need to talk as much. That would be it. It kind of dominates. Yeah. And when you've got someone calling and you're watching, you want to interpret the fight the way you want to, and someone else is calling it, it influences how you see the fight.
Hmm.
And he's, you know, he's very good at being down the line and subjective, right? He's very good at that. Very rarely hear bias in him at all, if at all. In fact, yeah. I've never heard any kind of bias when he's calling. But
I find him a little pro A side fighter.
Do
to
you?
Be honest when he's on?
Okay, yeah, fair play.
But that could be because I am staunchly anti-Matchroom whenever I'm watching.
Yeah, I know you are. Yeah, so you're the problem then. Is it your agenda that you're seeing on him?
At least I'm self-aware enough to
Why is that? Why are you staunchly against Matchroom? Like, that
it's part of our culture. It's part of British culture,
right,
that if we see someone doing well, we want to tear them down.
Yeah, but they're not doing well, are they?
No, they're not. You said something this morning which was very profound.
Yeah,
you said about boxing promoters, and I was like, "Oh fucking hell!" Flav's got up and had his Wheaties this
morning. Well, we were talking about the state of British boxing, wasn't we?
Do you remember what you said?
Yeah. The biggest issue with boxing at the moment, and why there is a seeming lack of interest. Certainly, Alex was saying that he's had a lack of interest in boxing for the last year or so, and he hasn't found anyone to back, which is a problem for him because he likes to back his fighters. Like since Joy Grove finished, pretty much.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about it, and I was thinking, well, the main problem is that there are three huge promoters with three huge platforms in a very small space.
Yeah.
So you've got issues with fights not being made because fighters belong to that state, the stables. You've got Sowland's in the middle of it all, trying to make it work. You know, trying to get these fights made.
Yeah.
You've got Shalom, who's new to the business, and then you've got Eddie Hearn, who moved away from Sky. So essentially, what you've got the best promoter in the game in Eddie Hearn with the worst platform.
Yeah.
You've got the worst promoter in Shalom. The worst is probably unfair, but certainly the most novice promoter
of the three, at least experienced.
Of the three, with the best platform in Sky.
Yeah.
And then you got Warren, who would go out of his way not to make fights happen with anything other than foreign boxers and in his A-side fighters.
Yeah.
So that's the problem. And it all started. It all started when Hearn went to the zone. It was the worst thing he could have done. Not for him. I mean, and it's made Matchroom huge amounts of money, and the zone is a massive, massive platform. But simply for the health of British boxing, it was the worst thing he could have done, in my opinion. He should have stayed with Sky. It was great.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Shalom isn't doing a bad job. He's not doing a bad job. And he's trying to fill that vacuum that was left by Eddie Hearn, but he's not Eddie Hearn.
Yeah. And what the other issue is that all the three of them always sniping at each other.
Yeah.
They're always, particularly Eddie and Frank, actually. Ben Shalom's not much of a personality, but Eddie Hearn and Frank Warren are constantly shitting on each other's cards and constantly saying, oh, that's stupid. Like the other week, right, you had Dan Aziz and Joshua Boazzi, and Dan Aziz pulled out, and then Frank Smith, who's kind of, you know, one of Matchroom's head people, said, well, it's because they only sold 1,500 tickets.
That's, I know, it's not necessary. It's not helpful.
No, because really what the best thing for the sport is that these three people all work together.
It's the best fights thing for them. Yes, they can make exactly so much money.
Yeah.
But it isn't. They don't need money. This is the problem, is they've transcended to a place where money isn't an issue, weirdly. And it is about ego. And obviously 100%. The Warren and Barry Hearn as well is, you know, stems from that. And that's why when we were talking this morning, I was interested to see whether or not there was a relationship between sort of Frank Smith, Eddie Hearn, and Francis Warren, George Warren, if they can somehow bridge this gap. Because Warren ain't going to be around forever. Frank Warren is not going to be around forever, right? You'd imagine.
Yeah.
Is there going to be some sort of way to mend this rivalry? Is Eddie Hearn... I was, as much as Eddie Hearn dislikes Frank Warren, and again, like, it's generational rivalry.
Yeah,
I don't think that he would let that get in the way of some of these big fights happening. He's desperate for Frank for Joshua to fight Fury now.
That's Fury. Yeah, he is.
So you'd hope that there could be some sort of, you know, because Sowlands can do it. Sowlands work with everybody. Yeah, they'll happily do it, because then they're not steeped in this age-old rivalry, you know.
Yeah,
and it's right. And everything, and it's that's why we're suffering, and that's why Alex is disengaged from boxing, because it's just a mess. We need one of them to collapse. That's the long and short of it. We need Queensbury, we need DAZN to collapse, or we need. Well, the sky's not going anywhere. So, you know, it's that's unfortunate. They're so powerful. Queensbury and Eddie Hearn are so powerful that we're loggerheads now. And if
that's it. You talk, you know, you say that you're, you know, finding yourself to be more interested in UFC, and they don't have a monopoly, but they give the appearance that they do, because they are the dominant kind of brand or kind of league, if you like, in MMA. Yeah, there's Bellator, there's Strikeforce, there's other leagues out there, but UFC is the one, right? They're the WWE of MMA.
Yeah,
and what
anything that people are interested in, really.
Yeah, and that in essence is what boxing needs, is a kind of a dominant force. But we're not going to get that. It's not going to be Matchroom, because their fighters keep losing. Frank Warren, he's burnt so many bridges over the years that it's not going to be him. And Ben Shalom just doesn't, I just don't think he has it. I just don't think he has it in him.
He's
fresh, and he signed a lot of fighters, but he signed a lot of B-plus players. None of them are headline of pay-per-view. None of them are even selling out the O2 Arena. Maybe Chris Eubank, but he's not one of his fighters. He's a Sauerland fighter. Mm. And because none of them have it in them, then they have to work together instead. They've got to work together, and they've got to start making these fights. We need, you know, Fury and Joshua should have happened already, and it's embarrassing that it hasn't. And, you know, people find out I like boxing, and it's, you know, in tennis, Federer plays Nadal. They don't get to say, oh, well, I don't want to because the court's the wrong size. Or, do you know what I mean? Or the drug testing. They play each other. They have to play each other. I know they're both pretty much retired now, but that's the best example I can come up with.
It's not
good enough. It's not good enough, really. And it's been going on for too long. And last night, actually, with Fury and his performance, somebody on Twitter said, come on, Francis, boxing deserves this. And
I know
we've had a pretty good year. We've had a pretty good year in boxing. There's been some good fights. We've had Crawford and Spence, you know.
What do you think they meant by that?
I think that they meant boxing has been taking the piss out of boxing fans for a long time with the silly mismatches, the influence of boxing, the kind of the blasé attitude to drug testing, the nonsense around purses and ring sizes and all of that, and they wanted to see the boxer lose.
Yes, that's actually lose.
Yeah. Is that how you kind of hear that?
I guess so. What that wasn't going through my mind, to be honest, when I was watching it. Although he's not very good, is he? Ngannou, obviously, he's not a boxer.
No.
And Tyson Fury is the best in the world.
Yeah,
but he was so much better than I thought he was going to be. Like, in terms of the crossover from MMA to boxing, of all the examples you've seen. You know, in the ones that have fought Jake Paul, for example, and that's, you know, you're talking about the lowest level of boxing. They even look shit in that.
Yeah.
Right. Ngannou last night looked legitimately like a boxer. He didn't look uncomfortable at all in there. And to look uncomfortable, to look comfortable in a boxing ring is quite difficult. It's not an easy thing to learn, boxing. It's very difficult. And I appreciate boxing is a massive part of UFC. But like I say, it's not when that crossover happens and you get in a ring with someone who moves like a boxer, like Tyson Fury, or any pro boxer who's worth his salt. They move in a certain way that isn't natural, because they've learned the art of boxing. Whereas Ngannou looked completely comfortable in there, and I was like, as soon as it started, it's just his shape, the way he threw a couple of punches. I thought, oh fuck, he's all right. I mean, let's say all right, he's garbage compared to what. A decent boxer would be like. if you're a seasoned pro, you know, he would, you know, I don't know what he would do at this level if he was starting from the beginning, what level he'd reach, but it wouldn't be very high, you'd imagine. But he looks fine. And I was like, this is, I'm interested. And then when he knocked him down, I was like, fucking yes, get him.
Oh, the last time we recorded, you remember, we was talking about Eubank, and I was talking about my reactions when Eubank scored a knockdown. I was like, oh, that. In that final round, when for me, Ngannou was winning the fight,
yeah.
But I thought to myself, he needs a knockdown because these judges will give him nothing. He'll get nothing out of these judges.
Of course WBC not.
The WBC are putting on the event. They've got Usyk in the crowd. Like, they're getting ready to make the Usyk fight. They're not going to do Francis any favours. I was sat there, laptop in front of me, going, empty the tank, Francis. Empty the tank on him. I don't know Francis Ngannou from anybody. Like, I don't know much about him at all. I've read a little bit about him this morning in terms of his story and that.
Yeah.
But last night, he was my Chris Eubank. I wanted him to win so bad. When it got to that final round, I was like, empty the tank on him, Francis. Empty the tank. Get him out. Get a knockdown.
He left everything in there, to be fair. Yeah. Just to take it out of the hands of the judges, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I just wanted him to get him maybe a knockdown or get a big last round to make it. To make it close. And in the end, it was close. It was really close. And it was 96-93 for Fury, which I don't know about that. 95-94 for Fury and 95-94 for Ngannou, which is what I scored it. I scored it the same, 95-94 for Ngannou.
I didn't score it because I didn't think I'd have to.
Yes.
Which is ridiculous that best fighter, the best heavyweight in the world on paper.
Yeah.
Like you said, we don't know if he is anymore, but. There is no world where Ngannou that should be even competitive. I could not believe what I was seeing. I didn't understand what was wrong with Tyson Fury.
It was really weird.
He didn't do anything. When I was scoring, he obviously didn't train.
Well, this is the thing. Right?
He didn't do anything.
When I started scoring, then because I was putting it on Twitter, right? I'd score the rounds and I put it on Twitter. Sometimes I'll do every round. Sometimes I'll do every three or four rounds. I'll say I've got it this. Last night I did it. Every round, and after I did it the first couple of rounds, I was expecting someone to come in my mentions, go, "Why are you scoring this, you fucking div?" But they didn't, thankfully. But
what do you mean that because it's a gimmick exhibition, you shouldn't be interested?
And Fury's going to win. It's obvious Fury's going to win.
Okay.
Yeah, that was what I was thinking. But you say Fury was out of shape, and I think he did look out of shape. But actually, his weight—he was 277. Which is the same weight he weighed for the second Deontay Wilder fight, which is probably his most dominant performance against Wilder.
Right, so that's irrelevant. Yeah, the sort of weight wasn't as important as... Because I heard that they said that it was the heaviest he's been. But that might have been... Just correlates with that.
Yes, it is. It is actually his joint... he was 3/4 pound over what he weighed against... Deontay Wilder. Yeah. Oh, no, sorry. The third Deontay Wilder fight. The second one. I'm sorry.
Which was
third fight.
Yeah. Which was conclusive, wasn't it? There was no doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah, we knocked him out, didn't he? It seemed to me that is he shot? Is that what we're talking about? Is Tyson Fury shot? He looked terrible in there. And he looked terrible against someone who isn't a boxer. His first ever fight, which is, he wasn't carrying him either, was it? It wasn't like he was longing it out to. I'm stumbling around here, right? Because I don't understand what I watched last night.
Yeah,
it doesn't make sense.
The way I've been, you made the comparison of Jake Paul and the fights he's fighting. I've not watched many of those. But obviously, I watched Mayweather McGregor, so that's my comparison.
There you go. In terms of
MMA,
that's MMA a good example because Conor McGregor looked awkward in there, right?
He looked awkward, yeah. But also you could see he wasn't a puncher, right? You could see in the boxing ring he doesn't have the power. He's a puncher, and he was back then a puncher in MMA, but he's not in a boxing ring. He looked very feather fisted, whereas Ngannou looked like his shots had spite on them. The fact he scored a knockdown since that, and Fury said afterwards, I was behind the head. It wasn't. You can see it quite clearly. It was a temple shot. He hit him with a temple shot and he went down. Very similar to Wilder. But Fury's always been a bit chinny. He's been knocked down plenty of times against guys that should not be knocked down.
Cunningham.
He got knocked, Yeah, Cunningham, the Canadian guy before that on Channel 5, he got knocked down. He's been knocked down plenty. He's always been a little bit chinny. He has. And some will say, oh, well, it's heavyweights. And I go, well, it's relative. And he's always the bigger man. So
did it look heavy, that shot, to you? I thought it looks a little bit army. I've never been punched or left hooked in the head, to be fair, by someone like Francis Ngannou, right? But to me, it didn't look like that heavy a shot.
No, it didn't. But I think just where he clipped him, he clipped him on the side of the head, and he's obviously got a bit of dig. And you could see, actually,
when he went down, I was like, oh my God. What the fuck? Like, chinny or not chinny, you're fighting a novice. Yeah. Was it that he just thought that he wasn't going to get touched?
Yeah.
Was it that he didn't train? Was it the punches that he was landing on a guy who did nothing?
I think he came. I think he did underestimate him. We all did. But in Tyson Fury being Tyson Fury, he contradicts himself with each sentence. Basically, in the build up, it was either in the build up. What did he say? Tennis versus table tennis. He said at one point, and then in the next breath, it'll be like, well, it's the heavyweight division. Anyone can hurt you. And actually, what was interesting as well was the opening exchanges of the whole fight. They both came to ring center to have a scrap, didn't they?
Mm.
And I think Fury maybe felt something, got clipped by something, went, oh, hello. Yeah. And I think Ngannou was a puncher in there.
He landed in the first round and Fury went backwards.
He reacted, yeah.
Yeah, he thought, oh, wow. Ngannou was known in the UFC to be the heaviest hitter. Like, what his thing was, power. He wasn't like a wrestler. He didn't spend hours on the floor rolling around. It was always striking. So you're
and that's
just because he's in a boxing ring doesn't mean he still doesn't have power. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and you could see he knew where to place his feet. He knew where to move. He knew what shots to throw. The fucker even turned southpaw.
I know.
And he looked awkward doing it.
He did look awkward. Yep. He did look awkward, but he didn't look so awkward that it was. I've seen boxers turn southpaw and look awkward, like proper boxers. So it was weird, and then it made Tyson change his stance. I don't know if he was doing it as kidology, but he reacted to it.
Yeah. The ESPN comms didn't pick up on it that Ngannou switched. They picked up on Fury doing it, but they didn't pick up on Ngannou, and he looked really awkward. He even got a little square on at points. He wasn't in either position, but it made Fury really tentative. He became less aggressive, because what I've noticed with Fury over the years is when he boxes orthodox is when he wants to attack. When he boxes southpaw is when he wants to be defensive and he wants to box on the back foot. He's usually much more aggressive in the orthodox stance. Because I guess his jab is stronger and it's just more comfortable for him. But when he just wants to be defensive and win the rounds, he'll box southpaw, which is what he did. He switched southpaw and he become very, very tentative. But then because Ngannou had done it as well, he became even more tentative. And there was rounds where Fury was barely throwing anything. And you could give those rounds to Ngannou just offering generalship, just because he was doing the walking down, just because he was attempting to win the fight. But yeah, it was just... It was fascinating. It ended up being fascinating.
It was fascinating for the wrong reasons. Like, it shouldn't be...
For the wrong reasons.
Yeah, it shouldn't have happened. Mm. And Tyson Fury didn't take it seriously, and now his reputation, for me, is in tatters at the moment.
Yeah.
Like,
we've got a question here.
Yeah, go on.
From My Pet Flamingo, which is a great Twitter name. Was the most carefully managed hype bubble in boxing just popped? Was it me, or did Fury look a little bit like his aura had gone in the head-to-head with Usyk? Good question. I think he did. He looked shook. He looked shook up about what
after.
Happened.
You mean the head-to-head
after
in the ring?
After the fight,
yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, he'd just been humbled to some degree by a UFC fighter. So you can imagine in that instance, you're looking at a man who's seen everything, at the worst part of you. And
yeah,
he did. He did, I guess. What did My Pink Flamingo say at the first part of his question?
This is really actually really interesting. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah.
Was the most carefully managed hype bubble in boxing just popped?
I think that's unfair. In what way?
I So I think I get where he's coming from, actually.
I think he's very
looked after, Tyson Fury. He is with Top Rank. You know, we were talking earlier about ESPN. The reason Tim Bradley's on ESPN and not Andre Ward is because Tim Bradley is a Top Rank man. He is a Bob Arum man. He was with Bob Arum for the vast majority of his career,
being looked after.
Which means he's a company man.
Yeah.
He's going to say what Bob wants him to say.
Understood.
So he's looked after by the TV company. Think about the Otto Valin fight when he got cut, when Fury got cut really badly by a punch.
Yeah.
And ESPN ran and told Tyson Fury's corner that it was from a punch, not a headbutt, and they had to change tactics. They got involved in the fight.
Is that true?
That's true.
I didn't know that. That's outrageous.
Yeah, but now you could argue it was the referee's job to do that. It's a punch. It's a punch, not a headbutt. It's a cut punch. They usually do. And I imagine they did, but maybe Ben Davidson didn't pick up on it or whatever. But they fought in the corner. So what was happening was ESPN was obviously able to hear what Ben Davidson was saying in the corner. I was like, that's not right. They think this is a headbutt. They're going to, they don't mind if this is stopped. We better do this. And the ringside reporter ran around and told them. And they were quite open about it on the TV.
I wonder if that's why John Fury was so anti Ben Davidson, that he knew that information. And obviously can't talk about it because it's not professional.
Doesn't make him look good. Doesn't make Fury look good.
No.
But it's interesting, the carefully managed bit. He is well looked after by his promoters. I think referees let him get away with fucking murders in the ring, to be honest. And actually, strangely, Tim Bradley said it on comms. He said, when he fights people shorter than him, he gets away with a lot of fouls. He puts the forearm in the face. He does a lot of leaning. He does a lot of holding. He tried it last night with Ngannou to try and put his weight on him. But Ngannou's wrestling trained, so he just fucking threw him around.
Yeah, nothing to...
He gets away with a lot. He's a convicted drug cheat. People never talk about it.
You know, they don't talk about it, but that is happening everywhere. It's rife. Like, he'd done 2 years, right? And I know he retired during that time and got really fat, but he didn't box for 2 years.
Fat and did coke.
Fat, got fat and did coke. That's how he dealt with his ban. And kind of that story, that narrative of him, like, getting fat and being a cokehead and all of the mental health stuff, that story really buried the drugs issue.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying he's done that on purpose, but he essentially built a different narrative for himself. And I'm not suggesting taking away from what the fact that, or in any way suggesting that it's not legitimate, but people bought into that comeback story as opposed to, well, he's not only coming back from being grossly overweight, he's also coming back from a 2-year ban from banned substance as well. 2 years is not insignificant. I can't remember what he got popped for, but...
Nandrolone. It's a steroid.
Right, so it's the worst kind. That's about building. Is it? I don't know about steroids, but is it? I presume it's about building muscle and mass and becoming more powerful.
Linford Christie got done for the same thing.
Right. It's essentially make you more damaging. So that's the worst kind. It's slightly. There are different things like weight cutting, making things weight cutting, or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Where you can look at it and go, well, look, it improves performance. You should be banned, but you're not becoming more destructive because of this.
Yeah.
But anyway, look. Yeah. So the problem, but just to go back, do you think because you got to remember what Wilder was before he fought Fury.
Yeah.
And Fury beat him significantly 3 times. No one else could do that. No one gave him a shot at beating Klitschko. Yeah. And he did. He went to the backyard and done it. What I would say though is
what about the rematch? He ducked the rematch.
So what?
It's not a good look. The guy was a champ. The guy was champion for 11 years.
No one wanted him to be. That was the best thing that ever happened to heavyweight.
It was a terrible fight. It was a terrible fight.
It's the best thing it's the best thing to happen to heavyweight boxing for Tyson Fury to do that. It just freed up those belts. And Klitschko was the most boring champion on earth. Like, I know he was brilliant at what he did, Did you ever go, oh, brilliant, Klitschko's fighting at the weekend, better tune in for that? No one said that, ever.
That's true, yeah.
Fair. I'm sure they paid people to turn up and watch him. That was a good thing. Those were significant wins. What I would say is he's done, since Wilder, he's done nothing. And the last 3 fights were completely pointless waste of time. White was mandatory, I get that. And Chisora was
his mate.
His mate. Embarrassing that that had to happen. Fine, fight your mate, but why should we give a shit about it?
Yeah.
Why are you paying? Why are we having to pay to watch it?
Yeah. There's a couple of bits. There's a couple of bits with that, really. Yeah. The Dylan fight, and I think I said this on the last recording. The Dylan fight, I think Dylan was the mandatory, and he got messed around a bit, and that's absolutely fair. He got messed around a bit. I think that's true. But I think he wanted the Wilder fight. He wanted the Wilder fight because he saw Wilder as beatable. And then when Fury won the title, when he got, he's now mandatory for Fury, I don't think he really believed he could beat Fury, and he boxed that way. And this is the thing for me with, and same with Chisora, I don't think Chisora believed he could beat him. And this is the thing I was talking about, Fury Usyk with somebody a few weeks ago. And I said, Fury has been playing a very dangerous game for the last couple of years. He's boxed Wilder, but I think he believes he could beat Wilder, and he beat him 2 times out of 3. I thought the first fight was a draw. I thought it was a fair result. Mm. He's boxed Dylan, who didn't really turn up to win, and he's boxed his mate in Derek Chisora, and now he's boxing an MMA guy, and he's supposed to be getting ready to fight Oleksandr Usyk, who for me is the number one heavyweight in the world, especially after Fury's performance last night. He has been playing a very dangerous game, boxing people that don't belong in the ring with him or are not motivated to win. And now, according to, in a couple of months' time, he's supposed to fight Oleksandr Usyk, who will go there to win and will believe he can win and has been boxing. Say what you like about Daniel Dubois. He went there to win the fight, Dubois. He's boxed Dubois and Anthony Joshua. Two decent, good fights. Joshua's much better than Daniel Dubois. For me, I don't know about you, Usyk has to be the favourite if they was to fight in December.
I agree with everything you've just said. I think, after that display last night, I cannot still believe how bad that was from Fury.
Yeah.
There is absolutely no chance. I don't think. And if this is what Tyson Fury is, right? And he did train, and he's, something's happened in the last six months or something for an audience to put in that kind of performance. Then there is no chance that Usyk doesn't beat him, and that is a seismic shift from what I thought less than 24 hours ago. I generally thought that Usyk was too small and that Fury would find a way of exposing his body. He loves a left hook to the body, and he will get Usyk out there by way of stopping a body shot. That's what I thought. That's what I thought. Yeah. I imagined happen. Now, I can't see a way where Fury wins if that is the level he's at now. My feeling, though, is that it isn't. I think that he completely and utterly, utterly underestimated Ngannou and just assumed, like the rest of us, that he could just turn up and do it. And he underestimated how good Ngannou was going to be, good in relative terms, right? The fact that he could take a punch and how fit he was.
Yeah. I think two things have to happen for the Usyk fight, for Fury to be able to win it.
Is that even that interesting anymore? How interesting.
I think it's interesting. It's the best fight that can be made in the division, to be honest. Joshua's rebuilding. Wilder has barely boxed in the last 2 years. He's boxed a round. He beat Hellenius in a round. It's the best fight that can be made in the heavyweight division.
I disagree.
Really?
The best fight that can be made is Wilder Joshua.
Yeah, fair point.
I'd be fascinated by that. But I get what you're saying, because it's fundamentally for the undisputed, right? And
it's two ways of best, isn't it?
Yes, of course.
Best is in best quality is for the championship, but then you've got best as in most entertaining, and what's going to keep you on the edge of your seat. And I think A is answered by Fury Usyk, but B is answered by Joshua and Wilder, because when I'm watching a fight like that, I will physically shake. It will make my body react because I will be so tense.
I'm excited by the thought of it, like right now, and it's not even been made.
Yes. Wilder needs to box, though, man. What the fuck is he doing? He needs to box somebody.
This is the one that goes back to the problem with our entire sport. Because you have absolutely no faith that Joshua and Wilder will even happen. And Eddie Hearn's talking about Joshua Fury. When I'd fucking much rather him fight Wilder. That'd be incredible.
Yeah.
Just quickly, what happens? What happens just quickly? Just while I've got a semi.
Wilder lands.
Yeah.
And the first time Wilder lands, Joshua goes.
Folds.
yeah, it goes. Because while it's a mentality thing for me. It's but also, I think Wilder's getting on, and he's barely boxed, and he's lost twice to Fury. But Joshua's also lost twice to Usyk and once to Ruiz. But it's about mentality, and I think Wilder is much more mentally strong than what Joshua is.
Yeah, I agree. Joshua also fought the better fighter as well. So Joshua's losses to Usyk look better on him than. Well, that's it. You just don't know. Just look. The question is the question is now the what we've got from last night was the main question is Fury done? Or did he not train? Did he not take it seriously? And you hope it's the second one.
Yeah.
Because then you'll have a competitive fight against Usyk. If that is his level now, for whatever reason, and who is it? I was listening to someone talk about, I think it might have been Frampton, was talking about Fury having to change his style. He can't move as much as he used to because and he thinks he has problems with his knees and shin and ankles. And the movement that we saw in the earlier part of his career, and actually in parts of the Wilder fights as well, that he's unable to do. So he's more of a walk forward fighter now. That was Frampton's estimate as to why we're seeing a little bit more of an aggressive Tyson Fury, and that kind of marries with what you said earlier. Like he went to the center of the ring and then realized he had to back off. And he isn't able to move like that anymore. So I don't know if that's a thing.
I think that's very true.
Yeah,
a guy of his size, you know, being that size and just walking around every day is going to be tough, right? But this guy's been boxing and training, and as well as carrying his bone body around every day, it's wear and tear. And I think, yeah, his legs have definitely gone. I think even before last night, you could see that his legs had gone. He's not that fighter. He's become a lot more aggressive now. And I think, and that's why as well, he's been avoiding certain types of fighters. It's why he's been fighting Dillon and Chisora and Ngannou and not wanting to fight Joshua, proper pure boxers like Joshua and Usyk, is because he understands his limitations.
Can't
now.
Move
he's
been like
he can't move like he used to. And so this is probably why he's been trying to avoid Usyk, because Usyk's going to be really, really difficult for him.
Mobile,
because
yeah.
While he's slowed, but he's still, movement is still fantastic, Usyk. And I think that's, but he has to have the fight now, but because the Saudis have put up enough money for him to take it.
Usyk would prefer, I think, a more mobile Tyson Fury than a more aggressive one. Like when Usyk has been exposed, and exposed is an extreme way to suggest that he's had trouble at times. You think about that ninth round, I think it was, against Joshua, was against hyper aggression.
Yeah.
A lot was made of Chisora's performance against Usyk. It wasn't as good as people said it was.
No.
But the small amounts of success that Chisora had was when he was putting it on him. So you could think that if Tyson Fury can't do anything but walk to the center of a ring and fight, or certainly can't move for 12 rounds, then he might have a better chance at stopping him. But who knows? Even like, this is the problem, is that there was all that came out of last night was questions. It was an exhibition fight. It shouldn't count, really. And we didn't think we'd have to take much away from it. But all I have is questions. And I'm hoping that he just didn't train. And the reason why I'm hoping that, because I really have got to a point where I really couldn't give a shit about Tyson Fury and what he does. Because you never hear the end from any of them, any of the Fury clan. But for seeing a competitive fight against Usyk, because there isn't any question marks afterwards, we need a Tyson Fury who's on it. Yeah, man.
What do you think Ngannou? Who would you like to see Ngannou box? Say he was the box.
You know what? His stock is through the roof at the moment.
Yeah.
It's going to be. And I'm, as a boxing fan, more than the UFC fan, I've just got I had a leaning towards Fury and wanted him win because he's a boxer. But he didn't win last night. It was unfair. Ngannou won that. So this is the other thing about the casuals coming over. The word robbery gets thrown around in boxing loads, and very often there isn't a robbery. Like Jack Catterall against Josh Taylor, robbery, I get it. But other than that, it very rarely happens. And just like the KSI shit and all that fucking, oh, it's a robbery. Like there wasn't enough quality in that fight for even the robbery to be even considered, right? The same with this. So it wasn't a robbery. In boxing, you have hometown fighters, and they need to protect their asset because Usyk's coming. So there's that.
Yeah.
But if you look at the relative skill set of both, you have to give every close round to Ngannou because he isn't a boxer. You have to. It's not fair. The fight wasn't fair. It was completely weighted against Ngannou. And for him to not get that decision and doing as well as he did was pretty scandalous, even though it wasn't a robbery. Does that make sense?
No, I get you. I get you. It was a close fight. I had it 95-94 to Ngannou.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wasn't offended that Fury got it. I expected him to get it just because they've got Usyk ringside.
We were talking on WhatsApp, wasn't we? We were saying that there's no chance that Ngannou's going to be given this. He won the fight, but he won't be given it.
No.
Well, I thought he won anyway.
But what Ngannou needs to do is start calling himself the uncrowned lineal champion.
Yeah. Because he would have been... He would have been
the lineal champion.
This is why lineal champions are a little bit like, I know it's important. It's a bit silly, isn't it? Because Buster Douglas was a lineal champion, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah. It's the man who beat the man.
Yeah, yeah.
Or the woman.
Fair
the
enough.
Woman,
but then ultimately the quality does rise to the top, right? The best fighter will be the lineal champion because a poor fighter like Buster Douglas, a poor fighter in comparison to Mike Tyson, you know, eventually, and Haseem Rahman, for example. It was only one fight that he was lineal champion for, right?
Do you know why though? The lineal championship was something like people, like boxing nerds like me would talk about, right? It never really meant anything outside of boxing nerd people, right? Why it became kind of into the lexicon of more casual boxing fans is because Tyson Fury, when he retired and came back, that's how he marketed himself.
Yeah, I remember.
He didn't have any belts anymore because he'd given all the belts up and Joshua had won them all. And then Wilder had the WBC belt. So his way of marketing himself when he came back was to call himself the lineal champion. Even though he'd retired, and generally when you retire, you don't get to keep the title because, like I said before, you know, if that's the case, Lennox Lewis is still the champion because he's retired and he can come back whenever he wants to,
Stop saying that.
But it's
you brought it up so many times about Lennox Lewis still.
It's true.
But you're only saying it and using Lennox Lewis because you loved Lennox Lewis.
Yeah, and Floyd Mayweather is still the welterweight champion and the light middleweight champion because he still boxes and he never lost. So if that, but I'm just talking about if
I know,
that's
mate,
your
I know.
Yeah, I can't find the word. But anyway,
yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, it was just one of those things that came to Alexa. I'm interested. I don't know how long we've been going for, mate.
It's all right. Okay, 54 minutes. We didn't answer the question about what Ngannou does next, though, did we?
No, we didn't.
But what does he do next? Because he's fascinating, right?
Chisora. They love him. They love the Saudis. Love Chisora.
The money's there. Does he beat Chisora? Look, just quickly before we entertain that and think about what might happen, because that is fascinating.
Yeah,
I'd probably watch that. do you know? He's 37 years old.
Yeah.
Which means, as a heavyweight boxer, if this is what he wants to do, he could still do it. And it's super fit, right? Super healthy. He could do this for another 5 years, 6 years maybe. So it's about what his desire is. Remember, he left the UFC over pay disputes, and he wanted a fairer purses for his opponents.
Yes.
And he wanted all kinds of medical. He basically wanted to. Was pitching ideas that the fighters union would pitch, and eventually he had to leave the UFC because it became impossible for him to stay. Rightly or wrongly, he's a proponent for good, right? But one that doesn't quite fit with the model that UFC has.
Yeah,
a model by which is celebrated by many, many people, myself as well. What I've just said in terms of stack cards every other weekend, they're only stacked because they can't do anything; they have to fight who they're told. Which makes for a better product. So Ngannou's now he's free to do what he wants. I think he signed up for another fighters. There's another league or something. I haven't really followed it. PB, what's that?
EFL.
Right.
He signed with them. They're an MMA organization, and also Clarissa Shields and Savannah Marshall are signed with them as well. They're going to have an MMA fight.
Right. There's tons of money in boxing for him. I don't think he needs to do it. It's up to. I mean, he'll do whatever he sees fit. But if we imagine in a world where Ngannou is now a boxer,
yeah,
there is loads of money for him. And he's elevated through a lot of the fight last night to a position where he doesn't have to fight prospects. He can pick and choose exactly what he wants because people will be fascinated by it. Chisora would 100% take that fight.
Or Wilder. Because Wilder was out in Saudi last night. And it just feels like Joshua Wilder's never going to happen. We'd love it. I think it'd be great.
No, I mean, for Ngannou, that would be great. I don't want to see that. But I'm happy for him to fight up a washed up Chisora.
Yeah, because I think Chisora would give him a... You know, I think people think because he's just taken Fury to a really close fight that he's going to beat all the contenders.
No.
And you can see, like you said before, while Fury's weight was comparative to, you know, previous fights or the third Wilder fight, but it's about A, how that weight is distributed, how he's carrying it, but also it's about motivation. And I think, like you've already said, I think Fury thought it was going to be easy, and I don't think he was hugely motivated.
Chisora would fight the way he normally fights, though, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
He would just walk forward Chisora and throw bombs.
If Chisora comes to win, or Wilder comes to win, i.e. a different mentality as to what Fury had and was in better shape than Fury was, then those two are probably, you'd make, well, I think Ngannou might beat Chisora just because he is so...
He's been punched in the head a lot.
Yeah, he's had 13 losses now. Like, he's shot to bits.
But
like,
isn't that mad to say? That's incredible to say that Ngannou in his second fight would beat Chisora.
Yeah, I think just because he's fresher.
If he knocks him... Yeah, yeah. If he knocks Chisora out, then what does he do?
Yeah. Yeah. He's only going to fight for massive money, isn't he?
Yeah, of course. Do you know, because bearing in mind he was a superstar in UFC, a superstar. Like the reason why he isn't a household name, this is what the thought is that because of this dispute, he was never pushed. He was made champion and no one could beat him, but he was never truly pushed because Dana White didn't like him. And if you think you've got essentially one of the most marketable things in the world, like a destructive Adonis, who is breaking everybody in front of him. You know, in boxing, he would have been the easiest promotion under the sun.
He was in the Jackass movie, wasn't he, Ngannou?
I've never watched them. Was he?
Yeah,
the
most recent one. It was quite funny, actually. One of the Jackass guys had a cup on.
Okay.
He was wearing a cup, like a jockstrap and a cup, and he punched him right in the dick.
Just the link to what I just said in terms of him not being pushed and working to make a better platform for fighters. He was joined by Israel Adesanya and Usman, and what was really interesting, because bear in mind Israel and Usman are still active fighters in the UFC, they joined him in the ring walk towards the ring walk last night. That was cool. Like, if you watch UFC, that was a very cool moment. These three, I put it in the group. I didn't know if you thought I was trying to be funny, but the African triumvirate, the three of them were essentially forming and were together like a brother in arms in this moment. And so the fact that they joined him on that ring walk was super symbolic. It was like, really interesting to see if you watch UFC. Because you thought Israel would, but wasn't, like, for Usman to be there as well was fantastic. It was really cool to see that, because Dana White wouldn't have liked that, but they don't give a fuck, basically.
One more thing before we go. There's a question here.
Go on.
We've got T's asked a question, but there's this question from Seamus that's really interesting to me. Is there a country you wouldn't watch boxing in? And it's the thing about Saudi, you know, the invention.
Oh, you mean
Saudi.
Ethically?
Yeah, because that's how I'm reading this.
Because of sports watching.
Yeah. Is there a country you wouldn't watch boxing in?
Well, if we're watching boxing in Saudi, then I think the answer's the question, isn't it? No, is the answer. No, probably not.
Yeah.
Like to answer that question, the sport is being used for political advantages.
Yeah.
But you dig anywhere, you'll find yourself being hypocritical.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no, absolutely. You know, you think about, you know, we watch boxing in America. America's got its issues, got some massive issues.
Yeah, I mean, the phone you're using to type that tweet and that question, while I'm not trying to be smart here, and I understand your question, it isn't important to talk to, but the phone you use, the minerals of which farmed in order to create them, have massive human rights issues attached to them. You cannot escape it in this modern era. But it's a conscious decision, isn't it, to watch these fights when they're in Saudi Arabia?
It's a good question, but I think the answer is pretty much no, because I think every country has its issues. And I really respect people that will boycott things or protest, you know, issues and all of that. I have an issue if I can't do anything about it, if it doesn't affect my life, then I find it hard to get really passionate about it, if that makes sense. So it's a difficult one. Let's go to T's question. What is Fury's legacy, and should Ngannou call out John McDermott to see who is the best of the men who beat the man? Yes, he should.
Yeah. What is his legacy?
It's interesting.
Depends on what happens against Usyk, isn't it? That is a legacy fight. How will he be remembered? He's always, like we mentioned earlier, he's always got the Wilder fights in the bank and the Klitschko fight in the bank. But other than those four fights, no one, like, there's no names on his... If you know boxing, you know the people that you fought, like McDermott, for example, Wallin. But other than that, it's not a very impressive resume. So this Usyk fight is legacy defining for him. It's all good, well and good being called, and everyone in boxing, I think, has understood or accepted that he's the best heavyweight in this of this current generation. But what we've seen in the last three fights doesn't prove anything. And the Usyk fight does. It's funny, I was talking to my dad. He's like, you're going to watch the Fury fight. My dad has said Tyson Fury is shit from day one. And he will not budge on it. And I'm saying, no, he's good. He's really good. He's the best in the world. He's like, nah, he ain't. He's rubbish. And then I went and watched that last night. And as soon as I see my dad, he's like, you think he's good, do you? What am I supposed to say? Oh, he had a bad night at the office. He was fighting an MMA, a fighter in his first boxing match. What am I supposed to say? How can I defend? How can anyone defend Fury at this stage? They can't.
You can't. Fascinating. All right. That'll do, mate.
All right, mate.
Thank you so much. Great.
All right.
Take care. Sports
Social Podcast Network. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.